Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. And today we get a chance to talk about the 6th annual Refugee Film Festival. It's hosted by Journeys End Refugee Services. With us, their Chief Advancement Officer, Teresa DeLuca, and Andy Camerata, Director of Outreach and Volunteers. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Jay.
Oh, let's just get into the whole Refugee Film Festival. I mean, it's the films that you find that you bring to this, because this is just so we get to it. It starts on the 26th and 27th, right? It'll be one showing of one of the films that's part of the film festival. It'll continue through April of next year at different times. But talk about how you process going through. Which films are you going to be showing here, Teresa?
Well, we are very excited about the series that's coming up and premiering on the 26th here with our 6th annual Western New York Refugee Film Festival. You know, we are always on the lookout for films. Maybe we're taking a look at what's happening in other international film festivals. Word of mouth, we'll have people who will suggest films that maybe we should look at. We're looking for films maybe that still need a broader audience. And then we're also looking for what part of the world they're going to be. We want to make sure that we are representing many different parts of the world, because we know that we have new neighbors from all over the world here in Western New York. And you know, we also want to take a look at maybe what are some of the issues that the refugees whose stories are being shared are facing, so that we make sure that we're hitting on a broad variety of that to make sure that, you know, all the goals of the festival are met. The Western New York Refugee Film Festival allows us to create a space where we can uplift the voices and the stories of refugees through those films, typically documentaries, but they can be feature films as well.
They have been feature
films. Or they
can
be short films.
All right.
Just depending on what we're able to find. But we want to uplift their voices, but we also want to educate, and we also want to entertain, because we know that there's a diversity that's brought in terms of wonderful music and richness in food. And so we really want to have that full picture of what the refugee experience is like. And ultimately, we're hoping that those who make the time to be in that space with us, to see the films, to have the talkback conversations after those films, have a little more empathetic lens to look at the refugee that they may be meeting with. And if they haven't met them yet, they may meet them very soon, because refugees are our neighbors and an important part of our community.
It's interesting you say space, because one thing I just realized when you guys came in to talk here is that there is literally a theater space at Journey's End. You're in on the fifth floor of the Tri-Main building, which is a great space of itself. But inside your offices, there is a theater. A 79-seat theater.
Yes, there's a theater there, and I know that very much was part of the creation of the Western New York Refugee Film Festival, because there was this space. How do we use this space to advance the mission? And so many great minds, including our curator, Kathy Spillman, at work to make that beginning happen. At the time, it was the first of its kind. We know that other similar film festivals have come since then, and we're glad that that conversation continues in other places and other spaces. But that film, you know, really allows an opportunity to be all in that space. Know that you're with a group of people who are interested in learning more, in having these conversations. and then taking what they learn back into our community.
And Andy, you know, you work with volunteers, so that you have a kind of an interesting perspective in that regard, because you know, you get to, you know, hear why people are interested in the first place of maybe helping out at the folks that Journey's End helps out, and also maybe get to see firsthand how maybe these volunteers can be impacted and changed by their experiences, interactions with people who are refugees.
This year, Journey's End welcomed 630 new individuals into our community.
Wow.
So that's a lot of families and a lot of needs that they have. And so I am always blown away by how welcoming the Western New York community is to our new families, and how many people, groups, churches, civic groups, businesses, kids, everybody comes together to, say, set up an apartment for an arriving family. So I mentioned to you a few minutes ago that literally hundreds of thousands per year are coming through our doors to serve in different capacities at our agency. So it's such a blessing to me to be able to witness that and to help facilitate that. So both to see the joy in the families receiving the kindness, but also to watch the transformation of the people who are doing the work. And last Friday, I had the opportunity to take a family to their new home while the volunteers were still at the home finishing up the setup. And so to watch the volunteers interact with the new family was absolutely priceless.
Wow. I mean, I can both see it in your eyes and hear it in your voice. It sounded like a really special moment. And I just want to follow up on that. We'll most certainly be talking about the film festival throughout. But, you know, what is that like? I mean, I can only imagine what it's like. I mean, when we talk about refugees, and if you've done a little bit of reading on what refugee camp life can be like in other parts of the world, to think of the journey that somebody has taken from, let's say, Africa or Asia all the way to Buffalo and then find themselves in a home with their family.
So I had mentioned to Teresa that the mother of the family was in the back seat of my car, and the interpreter was in a different vehicle. And so I couldn't really talk to the couple that was in my car, the mother and father, and the children were already at the house with the volunteers. And so I was trying to envision life through her eyes in that moment, not really knowing exactly where she was going or what would be there when she arrived. And when she arrived, you know, the volunteers really take care to prepare every little detail. They bring toothbrushes and they scrub, you know, vents on the floor. You know, the kindness which they show is unprecedented. And so to watch her come through that door and be welcomed by that group of people and have her children who were already there interacting and playing already on a swing, you just wonder. There was a 17-year-old boy who was curious about college and how would he go to college and how would he get a laptop. And with this, you know, these are retired teachers and retired UB professors, and so their antennas go up. And so that engagement and just those first moments of your new life in your new house, like how powerful. It's just, and I've been doing this for a long time, but it just never stops amazing me.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I want to most certainly continue to talk about that. Switching back, though, to you, Teresa, because one of your jobs here now is to oversee this film festival and find these different films. When you hear Andy describing that situation, do you find these films that you're going through reflect that type of emotion? I mean, you could see Andy's face and you can hear it in her voice as the conversation was going on. I mean, do you find that in these films as well?
Oh, definitely. I think that the films allow the voices of the refugees, which sometimes may be language barriers, do not allow us to hear in some of the moments that we share, but obviously interpretation and translation can help with that a lot. But I find having the opportunity through documentary film or the other films to really uplift their voices can make a huge difference for everyone who participates. And especially if they come into an opportunity where they're volunteering and able to share that little bit of insight and empathy and compassion that they got from that story. It's also, you know, one of the things that we're looking for, that we want to make sure we understand our newest neighbors are coming from a wide variety of backgrounds. And so we want the films to reflect the different backgrounds that, that they could be having so that we can build that empathy. You know, you may have someone who has very little English. You may have someone who was an interpreter for the U.S. military. Mm. And so they are very, you know, able to communicate quite well when they come. The journeys can look very different, and we certainly have the services and programs available to help meet each of our new neighbors where they're at as they come in to help them really get to that path to self-sufficiency successfully.
The first film on the sixth annual Refugee Film Festival is going to be, it's called Bad Acts.
Yes.
Which is kind of a misleading title because you gave me a little insight into the background. So let's talk about how this particular film falls into that you just said, that outline, how it reflects and uplifts certain voices. Let's talk about Bad Acts.
Yeah, we have found that initially when people hear the title, they're not quite sure what to make of it, and understandably. And Bad Acts is actually a town in Michigan where a family resettles. And so we are sharing their story and hearing from them. They're an Asian American family. So we get a sense of how they built up their life and their business, and then the pandemic hits. Mm. And so all that came with the pandemic, what did that mean for them? What did that mean for their family and for their business? And so we get to go through that with them throughout the film. And then, you know, after the film, and this is the case for every film and for every journey that we go on with the families, we do have a talk back afterward. And that talk back allows us to all kind of share our questions that come up in the conversations. And the talk back usually has a guest. It could be the director of the film. It could be the star of the film themselves. It could be some aspect of our community, maybe an expert in resettlement in some form or fashion, that can then really, really add depth to the conversation that that film starts. And we're really looking forward to the conversation ahead with the premiere of this film.
So Bad Acts is going to be shown on the 26th and the 27th. That's a Thursday and Friday, if I have my calendar straight in my head here. So there'll be a different post-talk with different people. Let's talk about those because there's some interesting work that comes out of this. I'd like to hear more.
So yeah, we have, because we're going to be in the theater, you know, and it's interesting with the pandemic, not to get too far off topic, but I do think that it's not by coincidence that the pandemic plays a role in our first film. The Western New York Refugee Film Festival started in that theater. When the pandemic hit, it was time to pivot. And we were able to go virtual at that time in order to continue the festival through that. And that allowed us an opportunity to expand the audience beyond Western New York. It also allowed an opportunity to open some of the discussions, say, to the directors. The films are not necessarily happening here in Western New York. The films are happening, you know, in all different places. So a director can be part of that discussion and we don't have to worry. How are we going to get them here? What's the cost of travel? Where are they going to stay? We can do that over Zoom. So being able to have those conversations is wonderful. When we are in that space where we can be local, then that offers us an opportunity to highlight some of our local expertise. So at the premiere of the festival, we are going to have two professors who are with Canisius University who are joining us. Each evening, a different professor, so we can have a slightly different conversation. On Thursday, we're going to have someone who has a PhD in sociology and specializes in migration and ethnic relations. And they will be also able to share some of the research that they have done and papers that they have written with regards to xenophobia and racism in that COVID-19 area. And that's a really important theme in Bad Acts. So that gives you an idea of how we're able to bring the film and the local expertise together. Now, on Friday, we are going to have a local professor who is the author of a very recently published and first textbook ever in the U.S. on the U.S. refugee resettlement program.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that's an area of expertise we may not have even realized until we start this conversation. And so we're looking really forward to the robust conversation that our community is able to have in this space and the questions that it brings for them and the answers that we're able to take forward in building our community.
It's interesting you mentioned on Thursday how the Canisius University professor will be there talking about xenophobia. And mm-hmm. I'm sure this is something that that your agency has to contend with at various times. We'll let the professors speak for themselves on this issue. But I'm curious, you mentioned in Bad Acts, though, xenophobia plays a role in Bad Acts with this Asian American family in the small town in Michigan during the pandemic. Without being too much of a spoiler, you know, how difficult did it become?
You should watch the trailer, Jay.
Yeah, you should.
Well, I watched the trailer this morning,
okay.
And, you know, I hadn't considered that. You know, they owned a restaurant, and with the COVID-19 and the pandemic and what was going on against Asian Americans at that time, there were people saying that they would no longer patronize the restaurant. So not only
even though, if I'm not mistaken, that this individual is actually of Cambodian descent,
mm-hmm.
so it had nothing to do with
right.
China or anything
per se,
like that,
of course.
Which is a lost nuance, it seems, in our society. But I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, that's it, though. And so not only were they dealing with loss of business from the pandemic, as all businesses did, now they have this added layer. And so, and that's all I'm going to tell you. Sorry.
No, okay. Well, you're not spoiling it for us. That's fine. But let's get into the larger conversation a little bit here, without maybe getting too political. We don't need. I know you've got to help everybody. That's your job. But at the same time, what about that xenophobia? How does it show itself here in Western New York? And it doesn't necessarily have to be violent or anything like that, but I'm sure there are attitudes that you have to contend with, whether it's in helping to resettle somebody or just people you talk to in your daily life that find out what you do for a living. Would you care to share about that a little bit, please?
You know, I think education is a real key. Whenever you're coming up against fears, oftentimes it's really welcoming the conversation.
Okay.
You know, keeping open to what are the questions that might be at the root of whatever might be coming up for them, and then bringing the experiences that we have. You know, obviously, people hear and read and are part of conversations that involve the work that we do all the time in all different kinds of realms. So for me, I always want to know first, what's the big question that you have?
Okay. All right.
What is the big question that you have? And then really be able to share the experiences from what we see through the work and the services and the programs that we provide and figure out, okay, what can we learn together? Because oftentimes once people understand, and this really gets back to the heart of the film festival and the power of story and the power of those individual experiences being shared in a way that we can take in. Right? Sometimes the stories are coming from global conflicts that can seem so big. How do I fit into that? What can I do about that? And sometimes that can bring about fear. And so when we really start to get into more specifics, then we can have a conversation that we can learn from as well, too, because we're all part of this community together.
And so, and I'll shift this more to you, Andy. So then you learn over a period of time that, and I like the way, you know, Teresa framed it there. It sounds very, you know, well thought out and a great way to, you know, approach and maybe perhaps disarm a certain emotion in conversations. But what about that? Are those, you know, types of conversations that you've had during your experience at Journey's End?
Oh, sure. I mean, information is the most powerful tool we have to explain to people, why are these folks coming? How did they get here? How did you get them? These are some of the questions that we get a lot. Having that theater, too, is a place for us to bring folks in. And so Journey's End is really always about doing that education piece,
okay,
whether it's in-house or whether we're on a college campus in a classroom at Canisius High School, wherever it is. And so we're really trying to share that information with as many people as we can and to share the personal stories. And oftentimes I'm blessed to be able to bring colleagues with me. And once they begin to share their story with people, the defenses sort of come down. And now it's just a person talking to a person. And the humanity rises. And so then I feel like we convert people's hearts, you know, and then they understand the work. And we're a city of immigrants here.
Right.
We all came from somewhere, right? And so this is really no different. And, you know, people are coming through at the invitation of the U.S. government through a legal process that is lengthy and, you know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of heart to get through the process and to come here and not speak a language and to have to learn and adjust in a short period of time. And so our mission is really just to welcome people regardless of their origin or ethnic background and help them to become the most successful, independent, contributing members of our community as they possibly can be.
What are some of the things, though, that you do here? Let's maybe talk about misunderstandings that you hear. I think one of the, you just stressed the one word, legal. The people that come to your agency and you're helping to resettle are here through a legal process set up by the United States government. But I'm wondering if there are other things that you contend with and would love to see maybe, you know, like you said, a conversation, Teresa. Well, we're having a conversation right here, but maybe we can touch some people who are interested. You know, what are some of those things that just are kind of basic misunderstandings that you have to overcome when you're having these conversations?
I think the most common question that I get would be, you know, what's the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker? There can be lots of different humanitarian designations.
Right.
And that can be confusing, especially because different designations connect you into the community in different ways. And so I know a lot of times I will explain the refugee process. And part of that, getting that refugee status, is that, you know, whether you are an asylum seeker or you are a refugee, you have to have been fleeing war, persecution, violence, and you have to prove that. The statute of the law may be very similar, but where that's adjudicated is different. So the refugee,
sure,
gets their status overseas, where the asylum seeker has presented themselves at the border, and their case will be adjudicated here in the United States. And the status determines work authorization. That seems to be kind of the biggest question, as well as connections to other community resources. And so depending on the experiences that folks are having, that may then lead to other questions for them. But really at the heart of the question is, what's the difference between refugees or asylum seekers with what I'm hearing, you know, say in my living room,
sure,
when I'm watching the news or reading my newspaper.
Right. Do you ever yell back at the TV when you see some things that are reported?
Well, you know, I think probably all of us have moments where we would like to maybe clarify something.
Okay.
For me, it's I would like to ask a clarifying question usually, because
right,
that's just my nature. I'm very curious and a big questioner.
Yeah.
But
okay,
yes, I have some questions always.
So then back to the idea, though, I thought you did a great job of kind of breaking that down for us. But at the same time, then, how are there other issues that you contend with? I mean, you're dealing with volunteers, so there's probably they're learning a lot as they come into Journey's End. Right, Andy?
Yes, absolutely. Sharing the stories of our colleagues, many who are foreign born, is one of the ways in which I sort of tell. I'm a storyteller, so I like to share those stories with them. The resilience of which our our friends, our new friends have come with and how far they have come in such a short period of time. So I'm inspired by them and watching their journey and watching their new discoveries. And so that's one of the ways that I work with the volunteers and try to get them excited about the work they're doing and the impact of the work. Because refugees, you know, they don't get a lot from the federal government when they arrive. And so it's really critical for our agency to fill gaps and to try to help, you know, provide the furniture. Everything that we can provide through donation puts money in the pockets of our families so that they can begin to build their new lives and, you know, get jobs and pay their bills. And so some of those things are new to them. It's a new concept. So as we're walking the families through it, to have the support of the community and the volunteers while the families, you know, building that solid foundation of which to sort of springboard off of. And having been sort of associated to refugee resettlement even back to 2008, watching the kids, you know, the parents, of course, are going to struggle. They're not learning the language as quickly as their children are. So now how many years out am I where I'm seeing kids who are in law school, in med school, knowing that they're going to sort of take that mantle and run with it to lift the family up to maybe where they were before they came to this country? Because some are coming to us and had been professionals in their country of origin and are unable to work in that capacity here in Western New York because credentials don't always, you know, carry over. And so the kids' determination to support the family and to learn the language and to advance, that is really, to me, why we come back every day and keep doing the work.
We're talking with Andy Camerata and also Teresa DeLuca from Journeys and Refugee Services. Their sixth annual Refugee Film Festival is upon us. We'll talk more about that and also continue our discussion about refugees here in Western New York as well. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, community is at the heart of everything we do. Whether we're dancing alongside you at Porch Fest, inviting you in for a tough conversation about systemic racism, teaching you about what to do when someone overdoses, or entertaining you with free concerts in our performance space. Engaging with and serving our community is our top priority. This is Public Media.
Take a levity break with Group Chat, hosted by Tiffany Bentley. Listen Fridays at 10 a.m. on WBFO for lively banter on everything in pop culture, music, movies, trends, social media, and more.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. We are talking about the sixth annual Refugee Film Festival. It's put on by Journeys and Refugee Services. With us, we have Teresa DeLuca, Chief Advancement Officer for Journeys End, and also Andy Camerata, the Director of Outreach and Volunteers for Journeys End. Back to the film festival. So we talked a little bit about Bad Acts, which is coming up on the 26th and 27th. There, I got my dates right. But how about some of the other ones that we see coming down the line? Because these are going to be happening periodically throughout the year,
right? Once we kick off in September, then the festival continues with a film pretty much each month. Okay. We've taken a break in some of those months that we know are particularly busy and folks may not have time to make the space for these conversations. But after that in-person experience in September, we're going to go virtual. So you'll be able to watch the films from the comfort of your own home. You can enjoy it with a few friends and have that experience if you would like. But there will still be that talk back opportunity because you can use the chat to ask questions. We are in October going to be doing Alone Souls is the name of the film. Now, this blends some real life footage with animation in the sequences.
All right.
And so it will definitely be a little different cinematic experience. It profiles the stories of Afshin, who is from Iran, Elaine from Burundi, and Patricia, who is Ugandan. And they're three unaccompanied minors. They had traveled alone without their families and find refuge in Canada. So this will just, again, give a diversity of experience of what the refugee experience can look like. Even gives us a chance to look at resettlement in Canada as opposed to here in the United States, because there are similarities and some differences. Then afterwards, we're going to be able to hear from the director as well as from one of the stars of that film in the talkback. So we're really looking forward to that. In December, we have I Come From Away and Nos Vemos Pronto. So they're going to be two shorter stories. And this takes us, really features a young Ethiopian South Sudanese refugee. So again, just wanted to highlight the different areas that we're able to connect with. And Nos Vemos Pronto is a short film chronicling the experiences of Venezuelan refugees in Colombia, and it's framed by a spoken poem that is spoken by a Venezuelan refugee woman. So again, differences in experiences, differences in the way that the stories can be told, to just allow for a broader understanding by all of us. Then we're going to take a little break for the holidays.
Okay.
So don't worry. You won't have to try to fit us into whatever all the plans are that you may have. And we'll return in February of 2025 with Wandering, a Rohingya Story. So this is an immersive look into the biggest refugee camp in the world, which is the Kutupalung. I may be pronouncing that incorrectly, so my apologies for that, refugee camp, which is in Bangladesh. So in 2017, just to give a little background for folks, over 700,000 people of the Rohingya Muslim minority fled Myanmar to escape genocide and now bear witness to their daily lives in the camp and to the past.
This will show life in the camp. This is what that
film will be featuring on. And then in March, we're going to have some short documentaries. And these short films are by three teens, one from Colombia, one from the Ukraine, and one from Syria. So the filmmaking, again, a totally different perspective when you have young folks who are, you know, controlling that storytelling. And we wrap it up in April, and we will be back in the theater so that we can have that in-person experience and community building once again in our theater in April with Flee. And this is a mostly animated film about the life of a refugee from Afghanistan who is on the verge of marrying his Danish boyfriend. So this gives us a whole different aspect of the refugee experience and issues that can come up related to identity. And he felt compelled to share his story so that he could bring a sense of humanity to the refugee experience as well. So that kind of gives you an overview of what's coming up with the entire series. And certainly there's a wide variety of dates. All the films, though, start at 7 p.m. We do have a reception before our premiere in our theater space, and we will be having a reception as well in April.
Okay.
So that gives opportunity for people in the community to mix and mingle a little bit just enjoy the welcoming community that we have.
Interested in that you talked about that Rohingyan refugee camp in Bangladesh. A few years back, I had an opportunity, independent freelance author came in and shared the stories that he learned from going there as well. And it kind of moves the conversation, though, Andy, something you made a couple of allusions before we went on the air about how it's hard to really understand what life is really like in a refugee camp. And you brought up a couple of really, I thought, stark examples about how people act in a certain way, because when you're in a refugee camp, a lot of the basics are not available much at all.
I could go on a long time about that. But going back to Rohingya, even just to talk about that Rohingya population, so we are resettling a lot of Rohingya who are refugees from Myanmar. They've never been to Myanmar. So you're a refugee from a country you've never been to because your parents or your grandparents' generation fled. And so you fled to a country where you were either in a refugee camp or maybe you were living in Malaysia. outside of a refugee camp. So that boggles my mind that you can be a refugee from a place that you've never been to before.
Right. Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yes, absolutely.
So really. And then I have a young staff person who grew up in a refugee camp and came as a kid, just graduated from Buff State with his degree, so I'm really proud of him. But he was mentioning to me that his refugee camp that he came from is experiencing extreme overcrowding. And I can't imagine what that looks like. What would that be like? And so we do learn so much from our foreign-born colleagues of what life in a camp was like. And in talking about that movie, the second movie, Alone, a couple things come to mind. But one is that a young man who works at Journey's End ended up in the Kakuma refugee camp. And as a young boy, there was fighting around his home. And his parents didn't have the money to send the whole family to the camp to safety, so they flagged down a truck driver and put three of their children on the truck to take them to Kenya to the camp where the older sister and her husband lived.
Mm.
And, you know, those stories, you know, and I didn't know that about him until he presented that story at a school while we were on the stage talking to the entire student body. And, you know, I just sit there and my mouth drops open to think you were a 12-year-old boy with an older sister and a younger sister, and how did you eat, and how long was that journey, and what happened when you got there, and how you were welcomed when you got to that camp. And the camp became a lifeline for him. So he was able to get education in the camp, and that education led him to a college degree and ability to work full-time at Journey's End. So, you know, these stories just really, they sit with you, and they change your life.
You mentioned it a couple of times, if we should expand, your colleagues at Journey's End. So in many cases, you end up employing mm-hmm. people who came to this area as refugees.
Absolutely. Yeah, we rely on their experience, their language skills, their expertise. And so we wouldn't be able to do the work without them. They're our best teachers.
I'm wondering if there's if there are some universal elements to life as a refugee, and if there, and I'm sure there are a lot of very stark and very specific differences for them. But what about that conversation? You know, what should we know about refugees and what their experience might be? Mm-hmm. They might be able to something that can help us as we interact. Because mm-hmm. again, you know, this yeah. is part of our community. You know, you're on the West Side, and you're probably going to see somebody, maybe not a refugee, maybe someone who's an immigrant for sure. But what about that experience?
They're their own independent, autonomous person with their own goals and dreams. And to help them realize their version of what that American dream is what it's all about.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Nicely said, for sure. Let's take another time out. We'll come back and finish up our conversation here. We're talking about the 6th Annual Refugee Film Festival put on by Journey's End Refugee Services here in Buffalo. Our guests, Teresa DeLuca and Andy Camerata. We'll take one more time out and come back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Ever think about state government and just get totally lost? Well, I'm Corey, and this is Compact Civics, so of course, I got your back. First, let's look at the four key officers elected by the people in New York State. The governor leads the executive department. The lieutenant governor is elected on a joint ballot with the governor. The state comptroller is in charge of the Department of Audit and Control, and the attorney general heads the Department of Law. Then, there are the heads of state departments and agencies. This is a long list, but what you need to know is that they're all in the executive branch and most are appointed by a governor. But the notable exceptions are commissioners and chancellors of education, which are all appointed by a board. The state legislature is bicameral, which means there's an upper and lower chamber. In New York, it's called the Assembly and the Senate. And for local governments, New York State is divided into 62 counties, which include the 5 boroughs of New York City. All these local governments have the power to adopt local laws that align with the state constitution and general laws. Yeah, New York government can seem complex, but what do you expect from a state with nearly 20 million people?
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. If you have a story or concern that we should be addressing, email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And this is What's Next. I'm Jay Moran. With me, Teresa DeLuca, Chief Advancement Officer at Journeys End Refugee Services, and also Andy Camerata, Director of Outreach and Volunteers. Andy, back to your experience with volunteers. Who makes a good volunteer at Journeys End?
Wow. What a question. Our volunteers really range from, say, eighth graders.
Okay.
All the way up to seniors and everyone in between. So it's incredible how people can use their talents specific to themselves and bring that to us. So while I had a volunteer come in yesterday who said, I'm going to set up the framework of how this is going to work, and then I'm going to turn it over to the younger ones to actually execute the plan. And so while she's not able to be the legs of, say, setting up an apartment and scrubbing the bathtub, she's going to set up the framework. She's going to put together the charts that people can select what items they're bringing to the apartment. She's going to bring in the high school kids to do the running, to unpack the truck. So everybody just brings this unique sense of what they can contribute. As I mentioned, you know, some people are homebound and they're knitting. And they're giving us these wonderful, baby layettes. And imagine a new mom coming and expecting a child in this country and being able to gift her with these beautiful donated blankets that somebody lovingly spent time knitting. Three amazing blankets showed up in my office from a board member's company. They had set up an apartment and somebody told their grandma what they were doing, and grandma knit these beautiful blankets. So I'm always amazed at how people, bring what they can and give what they can. And as I mentioned before, are willing to do things that, you know, they're not going to necessarily meet the family that they're doing it for. So what makes a good volunteer? Just a big heart and the strong arms to do the scrubbing.
Right? And you mentioned a board member's company. So it's not just necessarily just individuals coming in, but there's a lot of different frameworks that from which your volunteers come.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of companies have the ability to allow their staff to go out and have 8 hours of volunteer work. And so that's really valuable to us. So we'll see volunteers from all over the community coming, and not just for the resettlement part of our work, but we have an urban farm, so we'll have people out on the farm. We've got some school kids that will be out on the farm very soon. So there's a lot of different parts of our agency where we can plug volunteers into. We have a refugee asylee mentoring program for 18 to 24-year-olds, and so we're always looking for people. You know, these kids who come to the United States in that time period or, say, in their late teens, they don't have the networks, you know, the natural supports that we grow up with here in the country. So having someone that can kind of teach them the lay of the land, maybe help them get a library card, maybe help them learn how to drive, just navigating banking. We had a young man, I was thinking again about that film Alone, who came as a 19-year-old, and he had graduated from high school in his country. He was spoke perfect English. He was an interpreter for the U.S. Army. But he didn't have the documentation for his degree. And so he enrolled in Journeys End's GED prep program, and he got a mentor. And the mentor helped him to quickly move through the GED, get into a good college, and excel at work. He got a better job because the mentor had a connection at a company. And so that young man, you know, I just remember the first days with him, and young man, big dreams was kind of what he said. And just watching him achieve, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mentorship program sounds like a great opportunity for a young person to get involved in something that, you know, I had an experience with a Vietnamese immigrant who tried to teach English as a second language. And very quickly, the relationship became less about teaching language and just a relationship of just, you know, talking about what's going on and, you know, kind of learning the language as it goes on. But I guess my point is, when it comes, and you sort of mentioned this before, when it comes to volunteers, there's lots of different levels of participation. But I guess make the case that whatever you can bring is going to be a worthwhile experience, I guess is what I'm asking you to maybe describe the volunteers' experience, what you may have heard from volunteers, how they have been maybe transformed by that.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like they feel as though they've received more than they've given. I grew up institutionalized Irish Catholic, I always say, and I didn't know a lot of people that weren't like me. And so what richness and the culture and what you learn and the foods and the music, and Teresa had alluded to that earlier, and it's really something that I hadn't experienced before, and I know that our volunteers value that, and that's why they keep coming back. And some of these groups that I mentioned that set up the apartments, they don't just do one and done. They keep coming back.
Wow.
And so there's something there that really motivates them to help these newcomers. And they all have their own reasons for doing that. And they might have their own immigration story and thinking back to their own grandparents and things like that. So it's a great way for retired people to stay engaged. And they become friends with one another. They might not have known each other, but now they're in a volunteer group that is working for Journey's End. And so there's that camaraderie that they build with one another. So to watch that happen is also pretty exciting. And then to watch different teams, like a church team will, kind of team up them with an alumni group from a university. Mm. And so they kind of build their networks and they keep coming back to Journey's End. So what a wonderful thing for us, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're the beneficiary of all of that kindness.
Yeah. Now, Teresa, you've been with the agency now for about 2 years. Yes. So how about for you, your journey through this, if I can use that pun to a certain extent? You know, I mean, how, again, you probably walked in the door with a certain type of expectation, and here you are 2 years later. What can you share?
Well, our team is over 120 employees, and then it's even more when you add on the interpreters who work on a day-by-day basis, depending on what the needs are. I believe over 20 languages spoken.
Wow.
On the staff.
Wow.
So my world opened up exponentially when I started working with Journey's End. And I got comfortable being okay with, maybe I'm going to make a mistake today with something I say. Maybe it's going to be okay because they've been so generous to share with me whatever it is that I might need to be able to serve our clients, our new neighbors, our refugees that are coming in the best. So that's been a gift, honestly, that I wasn't expecting when I started working there. And so I'm grateful. I'm grateful for it.
It's interesting. You said something I thought, and maybe we can have a little conversation about this. You had the understanding that maybe you're going to make a mistake in these conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that you said something that is actually kind of profound. I think there is a tendency to fear interactions with people, whether it's a language barrier, a customs barrier, religion barrier. What about that? Andy, you've been there a little bit longer. But I mean, let's have a conversation about that idea that you've got to try to move beyond worrying about whether you're going to make a mistake to have a greater interaction and understanding. Your thoughts about that? Again, I'm more of a less a question and more just like, hey, let's see if we can't talk about this a little bit. Take a shot.
Sure. Like. Right. To ask the questions. You know, sometimes I have questions about a custom, and is it okay to ask the question and to build the rapport with the colleague to be able to have that talk? Why do you do that? Do you do that at home? I was just having this conversation about hijab. So a colleague of mine had a really cool hijab on yesterday, and I was just commenting, like, that is really cool. It was kind of like a hoodie. It came over her head, and I said, well, so do you wear that at home? No, no. And so she was telling me, because, you know, I've never seen her hair, and I've known her for several years now. And so having those conversations, it took me a long time to even ask her that, because I don't want to offend.
Right.
You know, we're really very careful walking on eggshells sometimes because we don't want to say the wrong thing. We're very careful not to hurt feelings. You know, people have been through trauma. We don't want to re-traumatize anyone. So we're really protective of not only our clients, but our colleagues, too. So it's tricky, you know. And so opening up that platform for dialogue, that mutual trust. And so it happens. It just takes time.
And we're fortunate, too. I'm just going to jump
Please.
In if you don't mind.
Not at all.
You know, that we get to work with folks who are out there helping to build cultural competency. You asked a little bit about corporate volunteers, and we do have corporate volunteers. We've talked a lot about resettlement, which is our core program. But that resettlement program is the first 90 days. We do offer other services, education services, and employment services. And so we're partnering with companies across Western New York to help employ our refugee workforce. And that economic benefit to our community is very important. And cultural competency comes into those conversations. And so, you know, we may be helping through the employment services one of our refugee clients get their resume together and get ready for that first interview. And they could have that first interview with the company and the company could say, wow, that resume looked great on paper. But when we talked, they didn't look me in the eye.
Mm.
Well, in their culture, in their traditions, it may be incredibly rude for them to look them in the eye. So that gives us an opportunity with the employer to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. How important is that skill to have on day one when you're working, or is that something that you're willing to work with as you know, this individual integrates into what it means to live and work here in the United States and in Western New York? So we have to be open to those conversations to be able to help everyone that we're working with to build the bridge for the refugees that are coming in through our programs and benefiting from our services.
And it's also good to know, like you said, that help on the pathway to employment. It's probably another key element to understand here, again, breaking down assumptions about things. People come here not only, you know, maybe they lack cultural competency, that might be the way to say it, but these are individuals, they're looking for opportunities and they want to get to work toward those opportunities.
Absolutely, yeah. We work with so many employers that are anxious to work with our population because they're hard workers and they're reliable. They come to work every day. And so that's a valuable asset to our community. You know, there's jobs that need to be filled, yeah, and we fill them.
And of course, we're talking in our final couple minutes here with Teresa DeLuca and Andy Camerata from Journey's End, brought here under the idea that their sixth annual Refugee Film Festival is ready to kick off. So we want to make sure that we touch upon the basics before we depart here, Teresa. So first film coming up, it's called Bad Acts. When is that?
That is coming up September 26th and 27th.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a reception at 6:30 at our in-person theater in the Trimain building, and the film will start at 7 p.m. And tickets are available online. I'm going to get right to the basics.
There you go. That's fine.
An ambassador pass will allow you to have tickets for all of the films, and that's $100. And then individual tickets for the in-person films are $25, and the virtual films are $12.
Okay.
We have a website. It is WNYRFF.org. That stands for Western New York Refugee Film Festival.
Okay.
WNYRFF.org. You will find more information in the trailers on the films there. So if you want to get a sense if this is an area that you want to learn more about, as well as be able to get that ambassador pass or those tickets for the individual films that interest you the most. And we hope you are going to be joining us. We love to have as many folks as we can as part of the conversation.
Jay, there'll be popcorn and pizza too.
Yes.
Yes. Two of
snacks.
The staples for any
free
film.
Free snacks.
And just the idea, also the space. You know, if you've never been to the Trimain building, I mean, I mentioned I walked by Journey's End because I've been frequently visiting the Buffalo Art Studio that's right down the street. But it's really the whole concept there is of the Trimain is a tremendous facility. It's being used in really interesting ways. And now we have now we know we have a 79-seat theater.
Who knew, right?
Yeah. So again, final thought.
I have a final thought.
Yes, I can see that.
I do. I wrote it down.
I noticed that.
I was just thinking, one of the biggest thrills that we have is watching our colleagues and the folks that we've served taking the naturalization oath, becoming U.S. citizens. That is by far the most, the pinnacle, I think, of seeing the work come to fruition. And watching our colleagues and the people we've served become the proudest American, rejected from your country of origin, maybe encamped in prison somewhere else, come to the United States on a pathway to citizenship, becoming a U.S. citizen, and being able to, I'm going to start to cry, live your life in freedom. You know, not everybody gets that opportunity. And so if you have an opportunity to get to a naturalization ceremony, do it. Run.
I couldn't agree more. I've had my pleasure to do so as well, and to see people from around the world take the Pledge of Allegiance there. It's really a breathtaking moment. Teresa and Andy, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us, and hope there's obviously a lot to explore at Journey's End. We'd love to continue the conversation.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
Teresa DeLuca, Chief Advancement Officer at Journey's End Refugee Services. Andy Camerata is Director of Outreach and Volunteer at Journey's End. The 6th Annual Refugee Film Festival begins on the 26th and the 27th at Journey's End at the Trimaine. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.